these defects of character. 7, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings. And our first panelist today is Nicole W. from the Maximum Service Group of Redmond, Washington.
My name is Nicole Welly. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi. And my home group is Maximum Service Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we meet in Kirkland, Washington at 7:30 on Sunday nights. And if you guys happen to be in our area of the woods, please come and join us. I have a sponsor, and I have an active sponsorship relationship with her, and that's important for me because I didn't always have that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I had somebody that I wrote down when there was a sign-in sheet, and I had somebody that I called when my you-know-what was falling off, and when things got really bad, but I didn't have somebody that I took my stuff to on a regular basis. I didn't have somebody that knew everything about me, because something about me, something in me, you may relate to this, still wants to look good in AA. So I was, I was asked to do this, and I thought about it, and I thought, well, I'll talk about the first time I did 6 and 7, because I don't want to talk about the fact that, 2 years ago at almost, I think I was almost 15 years sober, or a little over 15 years sober, I was having an experience in Alcoholics Anonymous where I was dying, and I was in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I didn't want to tell anybody because I was afraid of what you would think of me and the reputation I had built in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was quietly managing my life through the steps, and I don't know if anybody knows what that's like, but I think that there's a real pervasive problem, at least in our area, in Alcoholics Anonymous, of it's the wolf in sheep's clothing. It's learning to manage my life and my feelings by using the steps. And I've neatly removed God out of the situation because I am self-centered, selfish and self-centered, and I am managing my life and I am managing my feelings and I'm using the steps to do it. And that is not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the way that I've been taught. And what happened is that it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and I'm going to meetings, and I'm sponsoring a bunch of people, and I've got mucho service positions because I like to be busy, and I'm a girl who does bill when she's busy because I don't have to focus on the fact that, I'm not happy, joyous, and free anymore. And I'm not saying that I didn't do this thing in the beginning, and I did the steps when I first got into AA, and my life changed from the inside out, absolutely. There was a change in, revolutionary change in my thinking and the way that I approach life, but somewhere around the way, as a very good friend of mine says, I went back to sleep. And I was running around in AA doing a lot of action, and the well was dry. Like, it was all coming from me. And I was wondering why I was, like a sponsee would show up, and I was praying that they wouldn't show up. Like, that's the only prayers I was saying at the time, was like, God, I hope they don't show up. And I know you laugh because you've said the same thing. I'd neatly removed God out of the equation, and Nicole was living in her own world, and she was managing her own life, and yet at the same time, like, if you call on me in a meeting, I know what to say, I know how to sound good, I've got the lingo down, I'm still going to meetings, lots of them, I'm still really involved in Alcoholics Anonymous at several different levels, and if you ask me, I'm doing really well, and the gift of the gift in my life was that I met somebody, and so I always wanted to be, I wanted to be married, I wanted to have kids, and I got to about 38 years old, and I really thought it wasn't going to happen for me, and I lived alone for the great portion of my life and my sobriety. I tend to prefer it that way, and I met this man, and he was everything that I wanted, that I'd prayed for, and luckily he's patient, tenacious, because at first, I broke up with him twice before we ever went on our first date, and because I'm really freaked out about this. I'd rather chase you around and prove why I deserve to be with you, and when you come to me and you're very direct and say, I want to date you, I'm like, I don't know what to do with this, I'm sorry, what? And so, but, you know, through a course of events, we ended up getting married, and it was the best and worst thing that ever happened to me, because I didn't realize how much I was trying to manage my own life and my character defects, because I lived alone, and that was my solution. My solution was I would go out and be at the meetings, and I would be one thing, and then I'd go home. And that's how I managed. You know, nobody knew that I had a hard time getting out of bed. Nobody knew that, you know, all the things that I didn't know and I had forgot were alcoholism. I started to think that there was something else wrong with me. Because I don't want to drink. I haven't wanted to drink since, you know, first 6 months of my sobriety. I'm over 15 years sober. I don't think about drinking. You know, I'm acting out in a lot of other ways. But, you know, like, that's not alcoholism, right? We don't talk about that. Nobody wants to talk about what's really going on, you know? And it's those defects of character, right? And so, but I'm managing those, right? And how I manage those is that I'm one way here, and then I'm another way when I'm by myself. And I spend a large portion of my time by myself when sponsees aren't coming over or I'm not at AA. You know, I can work from home, which is a blessing and a curse for somebody like me, because it's like, well, why shower? And, you know, when I work at home and I'm in my pajamas at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and when you're married, they want to live with you. And so then, you know, they come home and they're like, today, the day you're going to shower, it's like, well, maybe we'll see, you know, like, and the thing is I didn't realize like it was so pervasive and the delusion was so great. It's like, I'm sober. Like there's nothing wrong with me. There's nothing wrong with me. And I'm going to meetings and I'm sponsoring people and I won't go so far to say as I'm passing on the sickness, you know, like I have good intentions, but I have nothing to give because the well is dry, because I'm trying to teach you how to manage your life through the steps, though. Let's be clear, right? I'm still in the big book. And I'm about 5 months, 5 months into this marriage, and the phone rings. And that's why this, you know, like coming here is like, I'm so grateful, and this is such a, you know, like, powerful thing for me is a friend from Colorado called, and I thought it was because they wanted to give my number to somebody, you know, and wanted to know if it was okay. And what happened is the same thing that's happened to me anytime that I've gotten help in Alcoholics Anonymous, anytime actually God sent me somebody, is like I had no intention of asking for help, and the help was offered, you know, and they said, do you want to work the steps? And I had no intention of working the steps ever again, right? I've done that several times. Clearly, I am okay. And, you know, but I'm crying every day. And, you know, I'm starting to do that thing where it's like I'm acting one way at home, and then he and I are going to our home group, and I'm starting to feel like a fraud because I'm acting another way in public, you know? And I don't want anybody to know about how totally insane I am outside of the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and depressed, you know? Because really what happens for me is like selfish and self-centeredness turn into two things for me unchecked, depression and rage. And I can handle the depression okay, because I, you know, it's like I've lived with it my whole life. The rage was a whole nother ball of wax for me, because I was like, I'm too, you know, like, that's not spiritual. Like, rage is not spiritual, you know? Like, when I'm about ready to beat you with my 9-iron because, you know, we've had an altercation on the road and this has happened, right? Like, the 9-iron's the easiest to get out of your bag because it's the shortest besides the wedge. You know, like, I think these things through. I'm a thinker. You know, like, I don't know what to do with this because I can't go to my AA meeting to talk about that. You know, what will they think? You know, and in my area, you know, I'm one of the ladies that, you know, there's not a lot of ladies in my area on our side of town that have a lot of long-term sobriety in the big book. And so, like, you know, what about them? Like, I'm not worried about me. I'm like, well, what about them? You know, and it's like, I'm probably about ready to either take a drink or blow my brains out, you know, or ruin my marriage. And what happened is that, you know, I got honest with this person and said, listen, I'm worried that I'm not going to be married much longer, and we're supposed to be in the honeymoon phase, and this is not what I thought it was going to be, you know. And we worked those steps again, and you know, here's the deal. It's like, I'm not saying it's not about alcohol for me, but like, it was about my alcoholism. And my alcoholism is that, you know, are those character defects, those defects of character that, you know, whatever, I have a list, but it's all selfishness and self-centeredness. And what happened is like, I got so sick that I didn't think that I was selfish and self-centered anymore in the way. And it's, yeah, it's funny, but like, here's the deal. I work very hard not to be selfish and I'm exhausted. You know, I won't take the last cookie. I'll make sure that you get what you need. Like, because here's the deal is like, I got to a place in AA where I wanted to look well instead of being well. And that will kill you. You know, it will kill you, whether slowly or quickly. And so, you know, like, I had the kind of self-centeredness that, you know, somebody was loving enough to explain to me is, like, I am centered in self. It's not, you know, I rush in front of you. Because trust me, I will not rush in front of you, get in line. But I will judge you when you do. Like to be clear, I have no tolerance for people who cut in line. You know, and I won't take the last of this. And I'll make sure that I try to get you what you need and whatever. And all the while, there's strings attached and there's judgment involved. But I'm okay because I'm sober. I'm okay. I've got service positions and sponsees and we worked these steps and I did 4 and 5 because that's, you know, where I get that list of, you know, like defects of character and then it was time for 6 and 7 and I can write inventory. I can even get to, you know, the fourth column and do okay, you know, and pray about it and get that. It's 6 and 7 that really, you know, one, it really trips me up because it's like this much in the book. And so the deal is that I think, you know, like I assign the, you know, like, well, we talk about how the first step's so very important because there's like over 43 pages, right? You know, I even do the thing where I show the sponsees. It's like, here's all the steps and here's the first step and here's the rest of them, you know, like, and then we have this much for 6 and 7 and like, it's like no big deal, you know, and it's a very big deal. Because this is, we're talking about things that I cannot get rid of on my own. Root and branch. I'm not sure if it's in here or the 12 and 12. It talks about, you know, root and branch. Like, you know, like, I whacked at those branches for 15 years, you know, and the roots were still there. And they just kept going deeper and deeper. And I kept thinking, you know, clearly there must be something else wrong with me. You know, and then it's the trips to the doctor and the whatever. And, you know, and really what's wrong with me is alcoholism. You know, and selfishness and self-centeredness, and I want to manage my way out of that. I can tell you that there's days where I'm still a little irritated that I can't manage my own life, that I can't get rid of the selfishness and self-centeredness on my own. The extent to which I have to rely on God, I feel a little bit pathetic some days. You know. So we get to that list, and. You know, and it doesn't look much different than probably any other list I've ever written or, you know, probably any other list that we've all written. But it was like, the question was asked of me and then, you know, here's the deal, like, I want you to think about this. Because the other thing is like, I'm a real good student and I've, you know, done this for a while and whatever. And I really like to know I'm a know-it-all, I like to know the answer, yada, yada. I like to look good, like, that's just, you know, part of who I am. The question was posed to me and then asked for me to wait for a week. You know, don't answer right away. Do you really want to get well? Like, really well. Like, not just look well, not just, you know, like, really well. Like, happy, joyous, and free well. Because I'd gotten to a place, and I don't know that it was a conscious thought, but, like, newcomers would talk in the meetings about, you know, happy, joyous, and free. And I think part of the thought was, oh, yeah, that's just the crap we tell you, right? The happy, joyous, and free, the happy, you know, horse, you know what, that we tell you until you can get to a place where, you know, you don't want to drink anymore and you can, you know, take these steps and learn to, you know, manage well. You know, there really is no happy, joyous, and free here. And you know, I'm happily wrong in that case. I'm not, you know, I'm not happy, joyous, and free all the time, and I'm still, you know, learning to, I had to get a relationship with a God I could do business with. That's what I was told, you know, and a reliance, and 6 and 7 was, you know, the funny thing is when I was asked to do this, I went to look at the 7-step prayer, and there's something about that made me laugh, because I looked at it, and I read it, and it's like, you know, my Creator, I'm now willing that you should have all of me. grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. And I was doing it in my head, and I was like, that's not all of it. That's not all of it. And I looked at it in the book, and it's like, oh, yeah, I conveniently glossed over the part where it says, I pray now you remove every defect of character, which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows, right? Like, conveniently remove the part of, like, where God removes those defects of character, you know? I can't do it. Like, no matter how hard I try, if I could have done it, I would have done it by now. If I could have figured out a way, I would have my own meeting and my own group, and I would be teaching you all how you could, you know, find better living through management of your own life. And I'm happy to say that that meeting does not exist, at least from, you know, for me running it. And, you know, that these steps do work, you know. And that, you know, I'm really grateful to be here, you know, with people that I love and that I trust. We're all, you know, we're family here, and my family is here, and thanks, Jeff, for asking me to come do this, and I've sufficiently given myself cotton mouth, so I'm going to sit down. Thanks.
All right, our next panelist will be Heidi H. from More About Alcoholism in Boulder, Colorado.
Hello, family. My name is Heidi Huff, and I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is December 10th, 1986. And by the grace of God, actually I should say through the grace of God and with the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I have been sober, and it's not by anything else. Not by my own doing, not by my own thinking, not by my own anything that I get to stand here today. What a ride this has been. And thank you, Jeff, for asking me to share. As usual, I don't know what I'm going to say to you, so I'm going to talk for a second and give the Spirit of God a chance to show up for me here. One of the things I this portion of the steps has to do for me is with is that there's this like a portion where we begin our house cleaning, which actually begins in step three, which we heard, you know, some of us at 8:30 this morning, and we talked a little bit about step three. And there's this idea in the step three in the prayer that I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, not so as I feel better, but so that I can better do His will. And that I'm going to have my difficulties removed for me, once again, not so as I feel better, but so that I can demonstrate and bear witness to His power, not Heidi's power. And that begins this portion of the journey where we go through the process of the steps 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. Okay. The very first time I ever underwent the process of step 6 and 7, I got to tell you, it was a blip on my radar. I had no idea. And when I first got sober, I was trying to win a bet. So I didn't mean anything to me. I just said, my sponsor said, you go home now and you do the end of step 5 and you say this, you get ready for step 6 and you say you're ready and then you do step 7 and then you call me. And I went and I did it, and I did it blindly. I didn't have any idea that there was going to be anything to it. And as far as I was concerned, the very first time, I didn't know that there was anything to it. I just went through it. But something happened. I didn't know it till, you know, a few years later, but something happened. And what happened was is that my mind began to change. I began to get a different outlook on the kind of person that I was and my conduct. I got to come face to face with the idea, am I really ready and willing? And and as I began to look at that, I began to have, you know, other changes in my thinking and in my outlook. Most recently, over the last couple of years, I've been having what I call walking into the dark room. And lots of us have that, you know. I got to tell you, too, my life is great. I have a good life. I have a good job. I have a happy husband. I like my husband. This is a good thing. I like my kids. I like my friends. I like my life. you know, things are, you know, really good. But spiritually, there's some dark places that, you know, I've begun to uncover and have not been able to quite identify and articulate. And I found this out through going through steps 4 and then going through steps 5, and I've shared this with other people, but there was some other little obstacle that I could not place my finger on, and I knew I was staring at it. I don't know if any of you have ever had that experience before. Well, I know a few of you have, and I know a few of you in this room. But what it looks like for me when I'm at step 6, I have just completed step 5, and I am now holding in my hands, you're going to like this image maybe, because this is what it feels like for me, is I have this heart, and it's a real heart, and it's a bloody, dripping mess. Okay? I have shared my inventory with somebody, but I have not given it to God yet. And when I'm there in step 6, I have this meaty mess, and I agreed to myself and to whoever I'm sharing my inventory with that, yeah, my inventory's pretty objectionable once again. I can't find much redeeming in there. And what am I going to do? Am I going to just sit here and hold this bloody mess, or am I going to move on? And so when I move on, I move into the step 7, which is a prayer. And if my experience with prayers is the next thing I do is assume and trust that God has given me what I need through that prayer, and I get to move forward. Sometimes that's easier said than done. Sometimes it's easier to say that prayer and think you're walking when you're not. And one of the things that I've come to find out is I have been entertaining a this idea that maybe I should mind my own business more often. And I've entertained this idea that maybe I can learn something from keeping my mouth shut more often, because I've never been sorry for something I haven't said. And that's a good thing, and it's a good intention. But what's happened is I've noticed, and it was brought, somebody in this program helped talk to me through this morning, because I was trying to get to this obstacle, and what's occurred to me is that I have been using this to hide so that I do not have to go through the hard, heavy stuff of anything that's confrontational, anything that might cause me some pain, anything that might cause me spiritual angst, and so I can wash my hands and go, okay, it's your deal, I've done my job. You know, and this is all at 26 years of sobriety. Now, I haven't got to the place where I feel like I want to die or I want to drink or blow my brains out, but it's not a fun place to be, and I could easily get to that place. It doesn't take but, you know, a few extra thoughts that I don't even notice there, and it just slips and slides right on in. But the good news about the 7th step is that it doesn't end with the prayer. Not only is there still more action by the steps that are followed for me, but the other thing that gets to happen is that I get to find out, this is the question I always had, how do I know if I'm really ready and willing? I mean, I think I am, so I'll say that I am, but what happens next? Well, the next thing that happens is usually an opportunity to see if I'm really ready and willing will you know, rear its head in the form of something that I am selfish in my conduct or dishonest or fearful. And the reaction that I have to that will show me how ready and willing I really am. And I will get to take myself again through that prayer and remind myself I'm giving all of myself to God, not just the peace I want, not just the peace I like, but every little nook and cranny, every fiber, every cell, every spirit, every part of me is the goal. The goal is to give all of that to God so that He can decide what's useful and what's not. My job is to move forward. My job is to try to pay attention. My job is to do His work and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I believe is that you know, do not have to suffer any longer from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that I get to carry that message. But I can't do that if I continue to hide. I can't do that if I continue to not put the one foot in front of the other. I can't continue to do that if I try to make it somebody else's fault that I don't want to put one foot in front of the other. I can't go out and carry the message or move through that 7th step and the 6th step if I continue to say the prayer but not really believe it. And I've had enough experience that I've evidence And I know deep in my heart that if I've said something to God, he's given me the power and he's given me the tools. I get to pick them up and move through that. Steps 6 and 7 are pivotal for me. All the steps are important, and these are pivotal. They enable me to be ready to move through the rest of what I've got to do. And the rest doesn't mean that I end. It means that I begin, because the real work of this program is carrying this message. And if I'm not fit, if I'm not straight in what I'm looking at, then I'm not going to be able to do that. I think I'm done. That's it.
All right, our next panelist comes to us from the First Things First Group of Montgomery, Alabama, and that's Corey O.
Hi, my name is Corey Long. I'm a very enthusiastic, grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi. I want to thank the committee for asking me to do this. They gave me my choice of steps, and the ones I wanted were not available, and the one I didn't want was, which was 6 and 7, which is pretty much a good sign for me that it's probably the one that I want. And it's just so funny to me that I get exactly what I need, even if it doesn't show up the way that I want to. One of my character defects that I was so proud I've overcome was this whole thing of the finances, and I've turned those over for God. And one of the folks that are with us got an extra banquet ticket, and I said, hey, should we give this to someone? And somebody said, well, are you going to pay for it? And my right out of my mouth was, well, no, they gave it to us. It's extra. Yeah, no, we're giving it back. But that's my defect of character. I think I'm so good, and then God will give me the opportunity to look at what really is going on. I got here on September 18th, 1998, my 2-month wedding anniversary. I said this yesterday. I waited darn near 36 years to meet and marry the perfect man, and when I did it, he was a raging alcoholic, but there was nothing wrong with me. And I believed that for a very long time, that there was nothing wrong with me. And as long as I was comparing myself to an active alcoholic, I looked pretty darn good. And that's who I was comparing myself to. So when I saw the steps and they said, and I saw 6 and 7 entirely ready, remove those defects of character, I didn't have any defects of character, so that really wasn't going to be an issue for me. And then humbly asked God to remove my shortcomings. I had none of those either. And I didn't really have a relationship with God, so there was really not a whole lot of reason for me to worry about those two steps. And I don't know if it's like that out here, but what it's like in my area, or it's what I hear in my area sometimes that makes the hair stand up on the back of my neck, is everybody's terrified of 4 and 5. And man, I've done 4 and 5. Yes! And I hear very few people in Al-Anon talk about 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and 10 and 11, but by gosh, I'll carry that message. Now, I don't know what message you're carrying, but I'll carry one. And I said at the meeting I got my sponsor at, I had said, I haven't worked the steps, but I'm carrying the message. And what I heard her say was, when it got around to her, and we don't believe in crosstalk, but darned if she didn't crosstalk at me, she said to me, honey, you are not carrying the message, you are spreading the disease. And I heard her say, shut up. And it hurt my feelings. And I went home in tears, and I said to my husband, she hurt my feelings. And he said, what are you going to do? And out of nowhere except God, I said, well, I'm going to ask you to be my sponsor. Wrong thing to say, because then he's in my ear. Have you asked? Have you asked? Have you asked? Have you asked? And this is where we were when I got a sponsor. I used to say it was a year of my husband sponsoring me in Al-Anon. He was in AA. It turns out it was about 6 months, but it felt so much longer than that. And I'm a helper. I like to help. That is one of my assets, and it's one of my defects of character. And I think there's a very fine line for me from where I go from being caring to being a caretaker. And he had gotten sober, and I believe when he and I married that he and I ceased to be he and I, and we became a we. And we should do everything together, and we should think the same, and we should act the same, and we should want to do all the same things. And so when he got sober and he started working the steps in AA, and I was going to Al-Anon meetings, because I was not working the steps, I was going to meetings, he decided that he wanted to start exercising. And what I heard was we needed to start exercising. And so I was going to help him exercise. Now, his exercising was running, so I think up in my head the best way I can help him is I can buy a bike and I can ride beside him. And I'm going to ride with him as he's running. But I forget I'm dealing with an alcoholic. And so what started out, and we were going to run 2 miles three times a week. Within a week, we were training for a marathon, which is 26.2 miles. And I'm helping him. And he's yakking in my ear and yakking in my ear. Have you got a sponsor? Have you got a sponsor? Have you got a sponsor? What step are you on? What step are you on? What step are you on? Those questions are incredibly annoying if you do not have a sponsor and you are not working steps. At least they were for me. Don't want to talk about that. And I'd heard this woman talk about working the steps, and I'd heard her talk about defects of character, and I heard her talk about turning things over to God. And that was an interesting concept to me, but I was not turning anything over to God because I had this idea that God had this list. We had the good girl list and the bad girl list, and I thought I was on the bad girl list. I was on the goofy girl list. I was not on the bad girl list because I'm goofy. And I had this exaggerated sense of how awful I was and how horrible I was and, you know, can you bottom this? I'm so bad. And I had all these ideas, but they were all my self-imposed ideas, selfish and self-centered. It was all about me. I was always thinking about me in comparison with you or where I was or how awful I was. And she was talking about the steps and talking about this relationship with God, and I wasn't turning anything over to God. So looking at six, becoming entirely ready to have God remove these characters, defects of character. And one, I don't have a whole lot of them, and I'm not doing it. And in about 6 months, you heard me say yesterday, I suddenly realized that I was looking at the problem. I was my own problem. And so when Kent asked me one last time, you know, what are you doing about a sponsor? I thought, I'm going to have to kill him. That was my option. I'm just going to have to run him down with the truck. And that was my idea of where I get 6 months into meetings and not doing anything. And I asked this woman, and she said yes, and she'd take me through the steps. And so she took me through the steps. And when we got to six, she had me read step six, became entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And I said, okay, what do I need to do? And she said, read the step again. Became entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. What do I need to do? Read the step again. Became entirely ready to have God. Oh, God removes the defects of character. That was stunning because I'd heard people say in meetings, well, I'm working on my defects of character. Well, God wants me to have these defects of character because I'm still working on them. I thought, well, if I have them, then I'm supposed to get rid of them. And I had this idea that I couldn't go to God and ask him to remove the defects of character until I had already taken care of them. Does that sound like insane thinking? It makes no sense to me today, but I thought, I couldn't go to God because I needed to get good before I could go to him and ask him to help me. And having done the 4 and 5, I had this list of defects of character. And she said, are you entirely ready? And of course, what are you going to say to your sponsor? No, I'm not entirely ready. I said, yeah, I'm entirely ready. And she said, okay, we'll see. I thought, well, that's an odd thing to say to me. But what happened was these defects of character started popping up. This whole idea of minding my own business, staying in my own hula hoop, not worrying about what my husband was doing. I was constitutionally incapable of checking the bank account to see what he was buying on a daily basis. My defect of character of control, my defect of character of controlling the finances. And she said, are you willing to have God remove that? And I said, yes, I am. Every single day, I was getting on the computer, checking the bank account, and I was rationalizing and justifying it and defending it. Well, I need to know how much money we have in the account so I know what bills to pay. No, I didn't. I was given the opportunity, and she said, and I said, all right, I am tired of looking at this stuff. She said, then you perhaps might be entirely ready to have him remove these defects of character. She said, what you need is willingness. It's not you removing it, it's the willingness to have God do it. And so I said, okay. And so now we're going to do the humbly ask him. You know, I was looking this morning, I was thinking about this and doing a little meditation about it. In our literature, it says at step 7 is the first place we actually ask God for anything. 1, what's the problem? 2, what's the solution? 3, I make a decision. 4, I do the inventory. 5, I share it with somebody else. 6, I become entirely ready. 7, I ask God to remove those defects of character. And she said, humbly is not humiliation. He's not wanting you to humiliate yourself. He's asking you to just humbly come to him and ask for his help. He wants to help you, but he's not coming anywhere. He's not invited. Ask him to help you. And I had to look up the definition of what did humbly mean. And humbly just means I know my right place in the universe. And for me, early on, it was there is a God and it's not me. When I got here, I would have told you I believed in a God. I would not have described it as a power greater than myself. Power as great as myself, perhaps, but not greater than myself, because he could take care of the big stuff like the Middle East. I would take care of the little stuff like my house, my husband, my money. And I had to become entirely ready to have God remove those defects of character. And I can't force myself to change. I can only ask him to be with me. And what happened for me is one of the biggest things that I held on to the longest time was the finances. You know, I am supposed to be responsible for the finances. God wants me to be responsible. I'm supposed to be a mature adult. And I used all the language that I had learned in Al-Anon to sound really good, to justify, rationalize, and defend my control of the money. And what ended up happening was God put a man in my life who I absolutely positively adore, my husband. His manner of dealing with finances and my manner of dealing with finances are completely different ways of dealing with finances. And one of the things that happened early on is he came to me and he said, I need to learn to be financially responsible. I'd like a credit card. Talked to my sponsor about it, said, okay, that would be good. I'm entirely ready to have God remove all of my defects of characters. I'm asking him to remove my shortcomings. I have to take some action. For me, it's always about the action. What does that action look like? Because it does me no good for people to say, well, let go and let God. What? What does that mean? What that means is I let go, I let God. Kent says, I've talked to my sponsor. I think I need a credit card. I say, okay. I'm not happy. I'm not comfortable, but I say, okay. He gets that little credit card, and within a month, it's got like a $500 limit. He's maxed that out. And I'm like, how do you do this in a month? How do you do this in a month? He says, I don't know. All right, we got to do something different. Constantly working towards this idea that God's in charge of my finances. And I'm saying it, but I'm not all the way in yet, I guess. I'm not all the way in. I'm not out, but I'm not all the way in. A couple years later, I'm ready to work on the finances again. I'm still doing the work. And I'm like, okay, get another little credit card. That maxes out. So we come up with a plan. I come up with a plan. I'm good at plans. And the plan is he's going to get an allowance. And he can do whatever he wants with the allowance. He's got his own account. We deposit the money. I don't check the account. It's his to do with. I'm taking the action. I'm still asking because I'm still having the fear. And I don't know why I thought that once I gave this financial stuff over to God, I wouldn't have the fear anymore. The truth is I had the fear, but I didn't act on the fear. I didn't constantly ask him what we were spending stuff on. Occasionally I would say things to him like, wow, that's a really nice gun safe. How'd you get that? Because I know how much gun safes cost, and they're not anywhere in his budget. And he said to me, God love him, he said, I bought it on layaway. Now, my husband is the king of instant gratification, and I thought, yeah, that's interesting. But what I learned to do, because I was asking God to remove my defects of character and my shortcomings, the ones that stood in my way, not his, mine, I was taking that stuff to my sponsor. I was not taking it to him. And I took that stuff to my sponsor, and she said to me, are you willing to let him go where he needs to go? Are you willing so that he will get where he needs to get? And I said yes, because I had seen God work in my life. I had seen God relieve me of some of my anxiety about this. And so I had to just let him go where he needed to go, because it really wasn't about him. It was about me trusting in the God of my understanding. I heard early on, how much money did I need to be financially secure? Just enough that I don't have to trust God. There you go. And so I'm doing this work, and I'm turning it over, and I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity, that I knew the steps, and I knew the action taken. I was asking God on a daily basis to remove from me every single defect of character that stood in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. I wasn't asking him, as Heidi said, I wasn't asking him to remove those defects that make me feel okay. I was asking him to remove those defects that stood in the way of my usefulness to him. And the day came when my husband came to me, and he said, I've gotten us into a little bit of financial difficulty. And I said, us? And he said, yeah, in 2 years. I said, first off, I said, it's only money will work it out. He almost fell off the couch. I almost fell off the couch. That's God. God took those defects of character of my need to control the money, for my sense of security to be in that money. My sense of security was in God. I didn't even know he was doing it. But I took the action that I was told to do. And I said to him, what are you willing to do differently? This is what I'm willing to do. And I knew what I was willing to do. And we worked it out, and people always went, well, you know, really, how much financial difficulty can you get in? You know, it's 2 years. How much? $42,000 in credit card debt in 2 years. Yeah. And for someone who's got a fear of financial insecurity, I know today, the reason I got to go through that was, one, it's a very small price to pay for the life that we live today. Because he did stuff differently, and I continue to do the work that I need to do in Al-Anon so that I focus on me and I don't focus on him. Our life is so far beyond anything we ever expected. Because I focus on me, he focuses on him, and the marriage works itself out. The problem for me comes is when I'm focused on his defects of character, which are so much easier to see. He's focused on my character defects, which he said, if you've got trouble, I've got a list here, right as we walked over here. Or, God forbid, we start to focus on the marriage, which usually starts with, let's talk about us. Oh, death words in our family. And I used to say a lot, you know, it's hard work being in a marriage because all of my defects of character come out in the marriage. It's really easy to work a program of recovery when I'm by myself because it's just me, and I love me, so fabulous. Put somebody else in there, and all of my defects of character start popping out. Because I had done the work, I've got my time is up, but I'm not going to stop yet because I got something I want to read from our literature. Because I have done the work, when I got to this part in our literature, talking about 6 and 7, I have held on to this for years, and I share this with the women that I sponsor. When you get to 6 and 7 and you're afraid to go into 6 and 7, this is what our literature says about it. By accepting our limitations, we can avail ourselves of unlimited possibilities. With God's help, we can overcome seemingly impossible obstacles. Miracles can grace our lives, and serenity can take the place of despair. Our defects of character can be blessings in disguise because in order to be free of them, we must deepen our faith, and that spiritual depth will bless our lives. Thank you for my life.
All right, our last panelist for this workshop is Robert R. from Greenlight Tuesday at Denver, Colorado.
Hi, everybody. My name is Robert Russ. I'm an alcoholic. I have a sobriety date, and it's April 28th, 1997, and for that, I'm truly grateful. Also, I have a home group, as Jeff mentioned. It's the Greenlight meeting in Denver. We meet on Tuesday nights at 7:30 at 13th and Washington. I believe it's St. John's Episcopal Church. All are welcome if you're in the neighborhood on Tuesday night. I love that group. It is awesome. We start with a lead out of the big book, and then we go do round robin sharing. And I also have a sponsor. His name is David Huff, and I think he's here at this conference today. And so, all right, so I guess I'm supposed to talk about 6 and 7. Before I start, I just want to mention and acknowledge that I'm a bit nervous, and it might be a little, might have some random thoughts going on here, so bear with me. And the reason why I'm nervous and I have fear is, what was mentioned earlier, is I just want to look good right in front of all you, in front of you all. And we'll see what happens, who knows. Maybe God will make me look like a fool and help somebody out there, right? That it's okay to look like a fool up here. all right, so my first experience with 6 and 7 was very similar to what's already been talked about. Is my sponsor told me to take this book, go to page, I believe it's 76, and then, you know, read through that bit after you do your fifth step, and review the steps that you've just worked and see if you know it's solid, or if you started on some solid footing, and if you built some sort of firm or solid foundation. And so I did that, you know, and I got into some prayer and meditation, and he told me to sit quietly for an hour and do this, and so I did, and went 45 minutes with it being quiet, and I didn't turn off my phone, and it rang, and it was an ex, and we started talking, and I realized I missed some things on my fifth step that I need to go back and talk to my sponsor about. And so that was my experience with 6 and 7. And then what he wanted us to do is study the 12 and 12, the 6 and 7 and the 12 and 12. And we went into a little more depth about 6 and 7. And he wanted me to do some writing, and it was very much like I was in school. But I really didn't quite understand at that time, 6 and 7, the depth and weight that 6 and 7 have in my life, and how important they are. I had a sponsor at one point say that precious things come in small packages. You know, and I think that's what it's like for me with 6 and 7, that I can, there can be a lot of change that happens when I do 6 and 7. And what's happened for me with step 6 and becoming willing to have God remove all of my defects of character has been very similar to my experience with alcohol and drugs, becoming willing to allow God to help me not drink or use drugs. And that's very similar to my character defects. So I had to hit a bottom with, you know, my drinking and partying and all of that. And then I think it's the same with my character defects. You know, I have to hit some sort of bottom, feel enough pain in my life to eventually say, you know what, I've tried to remove this on my own, and I've tried to ask other people to help me remove it, right? And it's not working. I just seem to get in more and more pain, you know? And then I need help, and I need help from a power greater than myself, which is God. And that's what's been my experience, you know, is I've had a sponsor once tell me, you know, if you're struggling with a character defect, do it as much as possible until you get in enough pain and hit a bottom and you're ready to allow God to remove it. And that's what he told me, you know, and I've done that. You know, and I don't like to admit that, you know, I've just had to experience that pain, that emotional pain. Sometimes even hurt other people that I love, you know, because I've engaged in this character defect. And one thing I've also learned about my character defects is that it usually boils down to being selfish and self-centered. You know, is that I'm not a very considerate person naturally and by default. I'm usually not the person that'll let somebody in traffic. I'm usually the guy that's going to make sure you have to wait to come in, right? I'm usually the guy that runs to the, you know, the grocery line to make sure I'm up there in front, or I'll scan the grocery lines, right, to see which one, the checkout lines, to see which one has the shortest line, right? I mean, that's just who I am, that just by nature. And what I've had to learn is that, you know, I've just had to ask God to help me with that and help me learn how to be less selfish. And that's difficult on a daily basis, because my immediate thought when I wake up every single morning is, what do I have to do today? You know, I mean, that's my first thought that comes into my mind. I don't even think about inviting God until a little bit later, you know. And I think that's why you know, in the 11th step it talks about having us invite God right away in the morning. Because I need God in my life. So that's what the sixth step is about for me, and about the willingness and to become willing. And also, in addition to that, I had a sponsor tell me that I need to look at my relationship with God and really take a look at my beliefs and my ideas of God And what are they? You know? Do I have a concept of God that I'm willing to allow him to remove these character defects? Do I have enough faith and trust that he will remove them? You know, these are questions I've had to ask myself. And they're tough questions, you know? I mean, because this is a God that I can't see, feel, or touch, you know? And to have that kind of faith to go into prayer and ask God to remove it, it's tough. It's tough, you know? And I had to take a look at my belief in God. And I didn't want to get honest about some of my beliefs, you know? Because I still had the belief that God was unforgiving and he was going to send me somewhere I didn't want to go, you know? And I had to learn to let that go. That's not what God really is and what God wants for me. And that was difficult. I had to change my perception of God. And I did. And I think when I finally did, you know, I was able to go into 7 and humbly ask him to remove these defects of character. And I had a sponsor once tell me, you know, about this whole belief and changing my perception and all of this. He said, you know, how are you going to know about God if you don't get to know him? And what do you mean, get to know him? He said, yeah, this is a relationship, right? He said, you're not always taking, right? I mean, that's not what a relationship's about, right? You got to also give time to God. And I said, what do you mean? Like, what does that look like? I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, because, again, I'm so selfish, right? Only thinking about me. And he's like, well, how much time in the morning do you spend with God in prayer and meditation? And what do you say? And what are some of those words that you say? Are you constantly asking God for the things you want? You know, is God Santa Claus? You know? Or are you starting to pray for other people and think about other people? You know? And these are some things that he asked me. I mean, these are tough questions, you know, and that I've had to look at. And, you know, and I still go through this. Today, even today, after 16 years of sobriety, I still struggle with this off and on. I still think sometimes that, you know, it is nice to have God as Santa Claus, you know? If I want something, I'll just go into prayer and, hey, God, give this to me, you know? And again, I don't like to admit this, but this is the truth, you know, that I still go back and forth with this perception. And then there's other days that I feel like that I have a loving God in my life and that, you know, all God wants is the best for me, you know, and that's, I go back and forth. And I think it just depends on that day. You come and ask me on a day that I'm in selfishness and I'm being dishonest and I'm resenting the world and fearful, and I'd say, well, where is God? I don't see him today. But if I'm not in those things and I feel loving and connected, I see God everywhere, you know? And I think that's what I had to do in 6 and 7. And I think that's what was talked about just a minute ago. I had to build this faith and strengthen my faith. And at this point today, I've been questioning some things that I've believed for a long time. And it's it's not fun. Wow. I have to look at old ideas. You know, old ideas that keep me from being of service to you and to God. And I think that's what those character defects are, right? They keep me from having this relationship. They block me. As I just mentioned, you know, when I'm resentful, selfish, or dishonest, it's hard to see. It's hard to see God. And you all look like the enemy, you know? You all become threatening to me, you know? But whenever I don't have that and I'm in tune and I, you know, feel the presence of my Creator in my life, you don't seem so threatening, you know? And and I think that's what that prayer is about too, you know, is admitting this stuff that I'm admitting to you today, is that, you know, when it says, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. You know, that was, again, difficult at one point, because I thought all God wanted, I mean, I thought God would only accept me if I was good. I didn't think God wanted to have anything to do with me if I was bad. You know, and that's another old idea that I've got to let go of. That I need to be willing to have God, or being willing to have, to give God, you know, the good and the bad of me. And so, you know, my character defects are basically what I just mentioned, are being selfish, dishonest, resentful, and fearful. And I look at those on a regular basis and see where I'm engaging in those, and I try to talk to somebody as soon as possible and then ask God to remove it right away. And what I've learned is that, you know, God can work really slow sometimes. And it's kind of like this analogy that I had a sponsor once tell me about. He said it's kind of like if there's this huge rock on the beach, right? And that's my character defect. And God is the waves of the ocean, right? Coming along and hitting that rock. And with some of my character defects, it just erodes. You know, God only erodes it slowly. You know, it's just really slow. And I don't know why that worked for me. And there's others that God just removed that quick, you know? And I don't quite get that, and I don't understand that, but all I know is when I work towards strengthening my faith and trying to get closer to God, you know, I change. And so, and that's what I think my part in 6 and 7 is to keep building that relationship with God and strengthening my faith, because without it, I wouldn't be standing here in front of you all talking about 6 and 7. I would probably be at home drinking myself to death. And so, you know, and I owe this to Alcoholics Anonymous to give me this opportunity to have a relationship and to go through this and take a look at my old ideas. So thank you for letting me share.
We still have a few minutes left, so please feel free to share your experience.
Hi, I'm Lindsay. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from Maine, so I'm really excited to be here, home away from home. And thanks for all of your shares. I love 6 and 7. I could talk about it all the time, but it's really about that experience that you were talking about. Because without feeling that pain, I'm not going to be willing. And without letting go of any of my old ideas in step 2, I'm not going to trust that God is going to take care of those things. I'm still going to practice them. And that's what I was told, was God's only going to remove them to the amount that I'm willing. So if I am still practicing it, God can't remove it. Just like with my drinking, like if I'm still drinking, God can't relieve me of my desire to drink. So, and the bedevilments in this always comes into play. It's like, where am I on those things? Because that's where my character defects come out the most, in all of those different areas with personal relationships and with work and with life. But one thing with the 7th step that it says is we humbly ask God. And I just have this image. I have this little 13-pound Jack Russell. And she gets pretty defiant sometimes, and I have to flip her on her back. And it's this act of humility, and I've started doing that in meditation. Like, I lay it all down, and I just, like, lay myself down on the floor. And that, for me, is this act of, you know, being humble. It's not humility, but it's just letting God really take me. So, yeah, I just wanted to share that, and thanks again.
Hi, I'm Dee. I'm an alcoholic. Very grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm here from Massachusetts, and I used to live in Denver a couple years ago, and I went to this conference, and I just, first I fell in love with Denver and Colorado, and then I fell in love with this conference, and I'm nervous. I'm very grateful for this panel, and it was really good to hear all of you. Specifically, I didn't get your name at the end because I came in late, but you told my story, and I didn't get to the steps till I was 15 years sober, and that was a long 15 years, and but I'm grateful that I got there, you know, and these past 7 years have has been all over the place, you know. It's been really, I've been hearing like a lot of beautiful things, and where I am currently, and what's difficult for me is because I have so much pride, I don't really want you to know currently where I'm at and what I'm truly about, you know. And I still very much work off an intellectual God, and it's a painful place to be, and it's, I'm working through old ideas still. I don't want to be there. I want to fully be here, and you know, and what do I believe, and what's, you know, what's my prayer life like, and meditation, and these character defects, and the first time that I ever did my 6 and 7, and I was asked those questions, you know, that you were talking about, Robert, my sponsor asked me, I didn't believe that God could remove all these things from me. I really didn't. I looked at her, and I was like, I don't think so. I was like so, I wanted to hold on so desperately to that person that I knew, because I was seeking consistent comfort rather than character building. Bottom line, you know, I'm seeking comfort. And that's what I knew, and that's what I was continued to be in. And thank God that I had more work to do, you know, and I was able to do some more work. And I later went on, and she asked me those same questions, and I was able to be in a different place, and I believed that God could. And so I don't know. It's been a really interesting journey. I'd say these past 2 years, it's been very confusing and dark and scary and joyful, and wasn't sure I was going to make it, and all of the above, just going through the motions. You know, I lived here. I moved back home. I fell apart when I went back home. I just fell apart. And, you know, and I'm grateful to be here today. And I still don't. I don't know what it's supposed to look like and feel like all the time. But I'm sitting here, and the most important thing, or the most important thing that I feel like is I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that I'm still here, and that God saw it fit for me to stay, and that I continue to say yes. Maybe not all the time, and maybe, you know, I'm not always willing, but, you know, the reality is I'm here today, and I have a long way to go, and it just feels really nice to be here and to know that I'm not alone, you know. I thought for a long time I was really alone in the fact that I didn't get to the steps. And then once I've gone through that process and now where I'm at today, coming to realize, like, we still struggle. I still struggle with this conception of God, and I'm still growing into what that looks like for me, not what it looks like for you, because I can still manipulate and make it into what I think it should be rather than what I feel it needs to be for me. So I'm still growing, and I'm still changing, and I'm still learning. And this is a great place for it. So thank you.
Hi, my name is Patrick, and I'm a member of Al-Anon. Just a couple notes of my spiritual experiences of the educational variety on 6 and 7. I think when I have said, and I've heard others say, I'm working on my character defects, I am really, in a sense, working on step 6. Because just like with step 1, I really have to be convinced I'm powerless. I have to go out and find out if I am. Am I really powerless over my resentments, my self-seeking, my dishonesty, and my fear? You know, and so I got to try them out, see if I can control them, see if I can manage it. And maybe I might discover I'm not. You know, just like someone who comes to AA and has to find out, well, maybe I can manage my drinking. Or comes to Al-Anon, maybe I can manage my attempts to control the world and put it down when I want to put it down and pick it up. Because essentially to be powerless means I've lost the power of choice. Choice is not available to me anymore. Second thing is on resentments. It was only until I came into these rooms that I heard expectations are premeditated resentments. And that puzzled me because I'd never heard that any other place, and I'd never heard of people living without expectations. And so I just considered it and reflected over it over several years, and then one day it struck me that what is it that expectations are for normal people when they don't get them? And I looked around at people I thought were normal, and they experienced disappointments. And that was an educational variety spiritual experience for me. Because I suddenly looked at myself and I said, I don't like disappointment. I love resentments much more than disappointments. I don't want to experience a disappointment, but I would rather have a resentment. And so I had the experience, and once I got that spiritual insight, I had the experience not long after that where a friend of mine in recovery had promised to sell his car to me when he was trading it in. He said, oh, I'll find out what the dealer wants and I'll offer it to you. And I said, great. And he calls me up and he said, I'm ready to do it. I said, fine, I'll take your car. You really take care of your car. And then I didn't hear anything from him for a couple weeks. So I called him up and I found out he got a better deal that involved family who he wanted to get their approval from doing it. And I was on the phone in my car, and I wanted a resentment. And this guy's in recovery. How the hell can he do this? And I prayed. I said, God, please help me experience this disappointment. And I prayed, and I felt it. And the upshot from that is now I am more easy, it's much easier for me to experience the disappointment, which may be appropriate for the situation. Because what's good about a disappointment? It's like they're like many forms of grieving. I change my reality when I let myself have disappointments. When I live in my resentments, my reality never changes because they're always saying the world could have been different if you had only. But when I let myself have disappointments, I saw him for who he was, another sick individual like me, and I could let it go. And I've had dinner with him. I will talk to him when I see him and in town. I feel just fine with him. But I also know he's not the person I thought he was. Thanks for listening.
Hi, my name is Mel, and I'm an alcoholic. I've just felt compelled to come up and thank you guys for talking about the pain and the dark times. And I have a lot of time in sobriety, thanks to God, but there were some very dark times. And sitting in the rooms and dying is very painful because my ego couldn't let you know. I was in a tough spot. I was in a tough place. So I really so related to that. You know, you're sitting there and you're saying all the right things and you're looking good, but you just wish you were dead. And finally, someone may ask you a question and it all comes out. you know, but I know it's God-directed, and you start doing the work on a different level. And I go to a group on Thursdays. It's called Emotional Sobriety, which is like our next, it's told to me, our next level as we live this life in sobriety. It should be sweet. It should be joyful. And if I'm sitting there and I'm not joyful and I'm feeling dark and I'm feeling like I want to kill myself, it's time to say something to somebody, because it's not just about putting the drink down. That's when life starts and it keeps going. So I really, really want to thank you for having the courage to talk about those dark spots. I needed to hear it. Thank you.
I guess we'll close the meeting. By group conscious, the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference does not close each meeting with the with the Lord's Prayer. Instead, we encourage that the entire conference be treated with an attitude of continuous prayer, and we will then say the Lord's Prayer together at the close of the conference on Sunday. Please help me close this meeting by joining hands for a moment of silence. Let us share our spiritual experiences and strengths with each other so that we may grow together in our greater understanding and love. I say we go be part of